right? John opens his gospel with these words. In the beginning was what? The Word, the communicator. You've got to work your way down to verse 14 before you find out that it's Jesus. But in the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God and the Word was God. And he is God's message. He is God's communicator. And communication is not just what we say, otherwise it would be really easy. Communication is actually what the other guy understands when you speak. That's communication. And very often there's a breakdown in communication within families, between parents and children. What is there about no that you don't understand? Or sometimes between spouse or spouse and spouse. Sometimes in the workforce. And there's often a dreadful breakdown in communication in organizations, and particularly Christian ones. I had a great example of what communication may or may not be once when I was on an airplane a long time ago. It was a Boeing 737, which means there's a central aisle with three seats either side. And it was almost full. There was one empty seat. And I was in the aisle seat. And in the window seat was a man in a probably $10,000 business suit with a tie about a foot wide, so he needed sunglasses to look at him, and a huge, black, very holy Bible. And he was in the window seat and in half of the next seat as well, because he was a large gentleman. And the seat between us, or what was left of it, was the empty seat. And both of us were praying that it would stay empty. But God was not listening. And just before takeoff, the last passenger got on. A 19-year-old girl. And if you're old enough to remember this, a punk. If you're not, it was a kind of protest movement among the youth. And they advertised it by their appearance. And this girl was 19 years old. She was making her very first flight. Half her hair was bright red and the other half was lime green. Hanging from her nose was a paper clip, and hanging from her ears various small bits of office equipment. And everybody noticed her when she got on. In fact, every head followed her down the aisle until she came to my row. And I got up to let her sit in what was left of her seat. And immediately they closed the aircraft door and we took off. And the suit opened the Bible. And it was so large that two-thirds of the right-hand page covered her left leg. And he pointed to a verse he got underlined in red ink and said to her, "Tell me, are you washed in the blood of the Lamb?" I'm not going to tell you what she said. This is a Presbyterian church. But it was very effective. He closed the Bible, turned his back on her and stared out of the window. And the back of his neck and the back of his ears turned a dull red. And I could feel the heat from two seats away. The girl wanted to listen to the stereo. And being her first flight, she didn't know how it worked. So I showed her, you plug the headset in there. You turn that button to number 7, that's pop music. You turn that one all the way to the left, that's maximum volume. And for the next hour or so, she was transported into the magical world of pop until they brought round the plastic puzzle. They used to do this on all flights. Once you see if you're intelligent enough to make a lunch out of it. See, and she wasn't sure how that worked, so I showed her how to fight her way through the outer plastic to the inner plastic that passes for nutrition. And in order to eat the way she ate, which was with great enthusiasm, she had to take the earphones off. And after a while, we got into conversation. And sometime after that, I said to her, "You know, there's a question I would love to ask you." And she said, "Then why don't you ask it?" And I said, "Well, I don't want to upset you. I don't upset easily." And I believed it. So I said, "All right then, well, it's about your hair." See, in case it wasn't like this last time you saw it, half of it is red and half of it is green. Yes, she said, and obviously she did know it, so that was a relief to begin with. And I said, okay, what I really want to know is, why have you got red and green hair? Is it A, you think it looks beautiful, B, you were born with red and green hair, C, you're celebrating Christmas in June, D, you're making a statement, E, you work as an emergency traffic light? She said, if I have to pick one of those, I'm making a statement. I knew it was that. But I still need some help, because in the first place, I don't really understand the statement you're trying to make. And in the second, if I wanted to make the same statement, I'm challenged in the hair department. It wouldn't be quite as effective in my case, would it? And she went all serious of me, and she jabbed me in the chest. And she said, I don't like the mess that you and your generation have made of my world. I looked her in the eyes. There were tears in mine. Because, of course, she's absolutely right, isn't she? She looks out at the world she's growing up in and thinks, yuck, what a disgusting mess. Who is responsible for all this mess? Obviously, it's not her generation, it must be mine. And I said to her, you're right. Couldn't agree more. In fact, I'm even more concerned about the mess that I see, because I've seen more of it than you have. And I really hate the mess that I and my generation have made of your world. Seriously wish we were passing on a better one to you. And I'm actually trying to do something about that now. But, I said, I'm even more concerned for people who will follow you. See, if it's okay to dig people with a finger, I can dig people with a finger. I'm even more concerned for people who will follow you. Because you and people like you are not radical enough to make a difference. She was a bit shocked at that because she really thought she was radical. And she said, not radical enough. What else can I do? Paint a blue streak down the middle? No, I said, that would only do what you've already done very effectively. That is to change your exterior. But if you're saying that you really want a better world, what you're really saying is you want better people. Because you don't get a better world unless you get better people, do you? And if you want better people, it's not enough to change their hair, you've got to change their heart. She thought about that for a second or two, and then she said, hey, that makes sense. I said, I know. Amazing when you think who said it. Yes, she said, it is. But then she said, but how do you do it? How do you change somebody's heart? Now, isn't that a great question? It is a wonderful question. I love it. And I said to her, you know, I actually know the answer to that. But I don't think I'm going to tell you. What? She said, you've got to tell me. No, I don't. Who says I do? Well, why wouldn't you tell me? Well, see, if I told you, you probably wouldn't believe me, so it'd be a waste of time. And you might hate me, and I don't want you to hate me, I want you to like me, so I'm not going to tell you. I'll hate you if you don't tell me, she said. I don't promise to believe you, but I do promise not to hate you. How do you change somebody's heart? Okay. You see that man there indicating the suit? And she said, yes. Well, it's what he said to you. She looked. You're kidding. Now, what did he say? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb, is what he said. What does that mean? It means, yes, young woman, you look at your world, you say, this is an awful, horrible mess. You're right, it is. It shouldn't be this way. Somebody ought to clean it up. Well, it'd be really nice if somebody would. There's only one who can. And in order to win the legal right to do that, he had to die the most horrific death the diseased man, mind of man could ever imagine, and some way beyond that. The really astonishing thing is he actually cared enough to go through it. And if you would trust him, he would change your heart, and then he would choose you to touch somebody else and change their heart, and that is the only way the world will ever get cleaned up. See, that all that is contained in what the man said, isn't it? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? That's what it means. Is that what she understood? No, it is a million miles from what she understood. What she understood was something like this. This pompous, I almost said nasty word. This pompous individual looks at her and thinks, she's a mess, and I'm very superior. When you see me, you see an individual who's got life all in shape, and you need to change and become like me. You could try religion. Something like that. Off-putting, counterproductive, negative, worse than useless, but at least the man is trying to communicate. Jesus was a fantastic communicator. He told two stories under pressure conditions, right off the cuff. They're the two best known short stories in the whole world. And he never did a course in storytelling. In fact, he had hardly any education at all. What he had was in what we call the Old Testament. The Samaritan and the Prodigal Son, two best known short stories in the world. How did he do it without education? It baffled the people of his time. In fact, his own neighbors said, where does this man get this? Isn't his father Joseph, his mother Mary? Where does this man get this stuff? And they were amazed. And Easter week we see Jesus, and we know who he is. But the people of the day didn't know who he was. And we see Jesus approaching Jerusalem, the religious capital of the world. And here is Herod's temple, a magnificent structure that would contain more than 40,000 people, most of them standing up, of course. Incredible place. Ruled over by very highly educated, cultured people who spent their life doing all this. And they're getting really upset with Jesus. And Luke particularly sets out his gospel like an approaching drama. Almost there's going to be a big high noon shootout. And Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem, and he's approaching Jerusalem, and he says, we are going to Jerusalem. And you wonder, what's going to happen when he gets to Jerusalem? And when he gets there and goes into the temple, it is so busy. And religion is really thriving. Thousands of people there. Expensive sacrifices. All, of course, had to be bought there with special temple money. And if you didn't have that kind of money, you had to change your own money at an exorbitant rate. And the people who changed the money and the people who sold the sacrifices were making a financial killing out of it. But it was so well organized and so powerful and so established and so dignified. And the robes were fantastic. And here comes this uneducated carpenter / street preacher. A nobody. And he goes into the temple and gets really angry and starts throwing tables over and scattering money, upsetting everybody. But the common people really like it. And they're listening to him and he's teaching them. And the Pharisees come in and they interrupt him in his teaching. It's not just one or two, there's a whole bunch of them. And these are dignitaries, these are powerful people, these are cultured people. And they say, by what authority do you do this? In other words, how dare you come here? Who do you think you are messing up our system? We're doing very nicely. What's Jesus supposed to answer? Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I really shouldn't have done that, should I? I don't really have any authority. I'll join the police force and come back in 5 years' time and do it again. What do you think? His answer is really clever. See, he answers a question with a question, which is classical rabbinic style. John the Baptist, where did he get his authority? From heaven or from men? Very simple question, isn't it? And they discuss this amongst them. What are we going to say? Because if we say from heaven, then he's going to say, but you didn't do what he said. Why not? If we say from men, the crowd will hang us. Because they all like John the Baptist. So they say, we cannot tell. Hypocrites. And Jesus, penetrating their hypocrisy, says, you cannot tell? All right, neither will I tell you where I get my authority. It's not a case you don't know, you won't admit it. And if you won't admit it, I don't have to. I play by the same rules. Boom! The whole thing's exploded in their face because he's really given his answer. I get my authority the same place John did, and it wasn't conferred on me because of some course of study or some approval of men. It's an authority given to me from heaven. Well, the Sadducees kind of liked this because there were two groups who didn't like each other much. The Pharisees, the word actually means holy ones, and the Sadducees. And the Sadducees liked a bit of religion, but not too much. See, they were cultured, educated, wealthy people. But they didn't like taking things too seriously. I mean, they didn't believe in miracles or judgment or anything like that. No. But if there was a good enough occasion like Christmas or Easter, except they didn't have that, and then they would be there and join in the festivities a little. It was enjoyable and it was good to be seen in public. It polished your image a little, and they could do that. And they were so pleased that Jesus had sort of demolished the Pharisees. So then they came forward and they said, Jesus, was this man? He had six brothers. He got married to this lady and he died before they could have children. And so under Moses' law, she had to marry, or rather his next brother in line had to marry her. And she was a pretty formidable lady because he died before they could have children. And one after another, seven of them all married her and all died without children. Now, if they're all going to be in heaven, whose wife is she going to be? There's going to be a big fight in heaven, isn't there? Who's? And Jesus said, actually, it's not all in Luke's account. Some of it's in another one, but he says, you err because you don't know the scriptures and you don't know the power of God. in heaven, there will be no marriage. We'll live eternally like the angels. But have you never read this? I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Of course they had. It was a really familiar text. Everybody knew it. It didn't say, I was the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And if I'm still their God, they must still be around. So how can you say there's no resurrection? And the Pharisees thought, wow, why didn't we ever think of that? It's so obvious, it's staring us in the face that we never saw it. And the next line is really fascinating. This is what it says. No man dared ask him another question. What kind of authority is that for an unemployed carpenter with no education? And all the best brains and all the enemies that he's got, they dare not ask him any more questions. How does Jesus do this? And some of you are going to think, I know how he does it, because he's God, right? Wrong. Oh yes, he is God. Never was less than God. But that's not the secret of his ministry. How was Jesus such a great communicator? He tells us in John's Gospel. The words I say to you are not my words. Where does this man get all this stuff? Isn't his father Joseph, his mother Mary? The words I say to you are not my words. The Father who lives in me, he does everything. I didn't say this because I'm a genius. I didn't say this because I stayed up night studying. I say this because this is what the Father's saying. You see, Jesus was actually the kingdom of heaven come to earth. And here's how he thought. This body I present to my Father. The whole time. This body is not just something on which I can place clothes and become a fashion model. Neither is it something that I can stuff with increasing amounts of ever more appetizing food thought up by the gurus on television. So I can indulge myself. Actually, this body he has given me and prepared for me so that I might give it to him so that he might be everything he wants to be in me, do everything he wants to do through me, take it anywhere he wants to go, and say anything he wants to say. The words I say to you are not my words, it's the Father. And just about the last words he said before he left earth were these. As the Father sent me, so I send who? You. In other words, God created you for himself. You have created, have all things created, and for your pleasure they are and were created. You were created for his pleasure, not yours. His. True. See, you were created so that you might willingly surrender your body every day to Jesus so that he might take it anywhere he wants, meet anybody he wants to meet, serve in any way he sees fit, and say whatever he wants to say through you. See, Jesus was a missionary sent by the Father's mouthpiece, 24/7. And as the Father sent me, so I send you. So you're going to be my mouthpiece 24/7. And just as the Father made me a communicator, so that even though I was in precious situations where my life was on the line, I always said the right thing because he gave me the words. And even though I'd never had much in the way of education, I told these fantastic stories. Best in the world. And whether they were Pharisees or Sadducees, I had the words for them, courtesy of my Father. That's how I'm sending you. You are to be my outpost in an earth that has been usurped by my enemy Satan. To be available to me 24/7 for everything that I've got in mind. And it will not always be comfortable. You'll have serious enemies. Might well result in death. It often has. But it'll be adventurous, and it'll be glorious, and it'll be more than rewarded when the books are opened and the eternity begins and we pass out of fake time into real time in the presence of the King of Kings. To him who overcomes will I give to sit with me and my Father in my throne, as I overcame and my Father allowed me to sit in his throne. It's what Easter is really about. It's an invasion of the kingdom of God into the empire of earth, and you have to choose your sides because there is no neutrality. Amen?